Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to a special episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewire News Group podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is pro-abortion. I'm Rewire News Group's senior editor of law and policy, Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo, Rewire News Group's executive editor. Rewire News Group is the one and only home for expert repro journalism that inspires you to say the word abortion from your stomach through your chest. Abortion!
Abortion!
And the Boom Lawyered podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
So the Supreme Court heard arguments in two cases challenging SB 8. That's the Texas abortion bounty hunter law that kicks in once a person provides an abortion after 6 weeks gestation or when a quote unquote heartbeat can be heard. And Jess is literally making raspberry noises at me right now, which sort of indicates how we are feeling at this moment in time. Don't apologize. I would fart noise right there with you if I didn't have to speak. So Whole Woman's Health versus Jackson is one of those cases, and it's brought by providers and other people in the abortion access pipeline, mm-hmm. like abortion funds, clergy people, that sort of thing. The other case challenging SB 8 is the United States versus Texas, and that is a challenge brought by the Biden administration.
And let's just jump right in and say it, Imani. This morning was a lot.
So much.
It was a lot, and also you'd barely know that it was about abortion. We had 2 hours of oral arguments.
It was three. It was
three.
Oh my
God. Time's a flat circle. There were hours upon hours of arguments. Arguments for days. And literally, you'd never maybe know it was about abortion, except for like a couple hints here and there. So like,
you would have thought the entire case was about civil procedure and whether or not states have the power to do things and whether or not the federal government has the power to do things. Meanwhile, there are pregnant people sitting in Texas right now who need abortion care.
Yeah.
And these jackasses are just talking about stuff that is so far beyond the actual critical issues facing people on the ground that I'm going to stop talking and hand the mic to Jess because I know she's got a lot to say because she was, woo, fired up this morning.
Okay. So the first case that the court heard oral arguments in was Holman's Health versus Jackson. And as Imani said, that's the challenge to SB 8 that has been brought by providers and folks in the abortion access pipeline. And, you know, you would think that with a law that has been in effect for over a month, right? Two months now. Yeah. It's November. Holy shit. Okay, time. Again, doing numbers on me right now. Knock it off. But seriously, you would think that after a law that has been in effect for this long, we'd be talking a lot about abortion. But we didn't. No. We spent most of the time in Holman's Health versus Jackson talking about power arguments. Mm-hmm. Should the cases be heard in state court, Imani, versus federal court? Really, this is an interesting thought exercise to do about venue, right? Like, if you were not a lawyer and you tuned in today's arguments, you would maybe think that this was literally just about where should we file a lawsuit?
It's so true. It was mind-boggling how infrequently people said the word abortion in a case that is fundamentally about the constitutional right to abortion.
Yeah.
It actually blew my mind. But I do want to talk about one thing.
Yeah?
Amy Coney Barrett.
Ooh, wow. What was going on?
I don't know. I mean, you being her Midwestern white lady nemesis, I figure you might be able to translate some of the things that she was saying because it sounded to me, and I did notice that Chase Strangio over at the ACLU also mm-hmm. pointed this out, that she was asking really good questions,
yeah.
but it's not the goodness of the question. It's the intent behind the question. And so can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so for folks who weren't able to tune in to the arguments this morning or, you know, had to work or take care of family members and weren't able to follow along with us on social media, in Holman's Health versus Jackson, Amy Coney Barrett sounded really, really suspicious of the entire enforcement mechanism around SB 8. And that was really what was at issue here in the lawsuit is, you know, can Texas effectively insulate itself from judicial review when it passes unconstitutional laws? And Amy Coney Barrett, no fan of abortion. abortion mm-hmm. by any stretch, was really, really skeptical of Texas's arguments. And not just in a way that was like, you know what, that sounds a little shady. I'm concerned here, but she asked, and I will give her credit here. She asked substantive questions about the fact that this law was crafted in ways to allow no meaningful remedy in either state court or federal court. So if Imani and I were just talking about how this case was really about, like, where could you bring a lawsuit, right? You bring it in state court, or you bring it in federal court. Amy Coney Barrett brought up this really good point, which is state courts have a hard time fully vindicating federal constitutional rights. They're not the appropriate place, right? Like, you don't take your refrigerator to the mechanic the same way you don't go sue out federal constitutional rights in state courts.
Right.
That's effectively what she said. And she went back to it. So it wasn't like she's just getting some talking points in. This struck me as someone who was really honestly suspicious about it. And if you think of the fact that the court let this law take effect in September on a 5-4 count, we were going into this argument thinking maybe it was Brett Kavanaugh who was a vote that could possibly switch here and block SB 8 enforcement on the second go round. I think it might actually be Amy Coney Barrett now.
Which is weird, but also don't get excited about that fact.
Yeah, because yeah, we should context mean, that.
Like, context. She might not like the enforcement mechanism, but I have said for a while now that I think the end result is going to be that they kill abortion, they gut abortion even further, but they tell Texas, this enforcement mechanism is absolutely bonkers, and we're not messing around with this anymore. So yeah. No, you can't outsource enforcement of your laws to just any jackass in the country.
Precisely.
Right? Like, we're not going to do that, because there's going to come a point where the right that is at issue is not a disfavored right by conservatives like mm-hmm. abortion or contraception or same-sex marriage, but a right like gun rights.
Yes.
And do we want to live in a rubric where someone can sue someone for $1 million simply for owning a gun, which is a constitutional right? Like, yeah. And I think that's the intent behind her concern about the enforcement mechanism. So if you get rid of the enforcement mechanism, then we don't have to deal with any more of these shenanigans. But also, we're going to get rid of Roe. So don't yeah. you worry about it. Like, if you could just yeah. hold your horses, we're getting around to gutting Roe. And that's really sort of the vibe that I got from her.
I think you are 100% on the money. And that's such a smart point, because in a month, in literally 4 weeks from today, December 1st, the Supreme Court is hearing oral arguments in Dobbs versus Jay. Whoop!
Whoop
right?
Whoop.
Like, we but like that case, the direct challenge to Roe versus Wade, that is still being heard. So, you know, in the event that Amy Coney Barrett should side with providers, and by siding with providers here, let's be very clear what that means. That just means the lawsuits continue. That doesn't mean she's saying they're right at the end of the day, just that they should be able to continue their challenges in court.
Yeah.
That a month later, we are going to hear Amy Coney Barrett be very sympathetic to Mississippi's attempt to ban abortion before viability and in violation of Roe and Casey.
And the really interesting part about these oral arguments, and I do want to get your thoughts about how you thought Solicitor General Prelogar did, because I thought she was phenomenal.
Ooh, yeah.
But what was really interesting is that the arguments coming from conservatives about their discomfort with this enforcement mechanism is really a selfish argument. It's about
say more.
Self-preservation, right? Because they are the body that is tasked with determining what rights are constitutional, interpreting the Constitution, and sort of giving everyone in all 50 states a playbook for how we're supposed to do things. And what mm-hmm. Texas has done is said, we're not going to play by your playbook. We're going to do our own thing. Constitution be damned. Supremacy clause be damned. You nine people be damned. And I don't think the Supreme Court justices are really a big fan of that. I think it's an attack on them as their legitimacy almost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
and I don't think they're going to stand for that. So I wouldn't go around thinking, hey, ACB's on our side. She's not on our side. She's not on the side of abortion rights or reproductive freedom. She's on the side of Amy Coney Barrett, and she's on the side of religion.
You know, we have to talk a little bit, too, about just, I mean, look, we know there's going to be bad faith arguments by conservatives in these lawsuits, but can we talk about all of the Overton window shifting that was happening in Holman's Health versus Jackson today? The Texas Assistant Solicitor General, Solicitor General Stone, which that dude sounds so much like Mike Lee. I was really getting sweaty, like it was rough. Anyway.
And it's concerning that you sort of know in the back of your mind what Senator Mike Lee from Utah sounds like. That's just a strange thing, Jess, I'm going to tell you.
You know, it's fair to drag me for that. I have made some choices in my life that maybe, looking back now, I could have gone a different direction. Nobody should know Mike Lee's voice by audio recognition only, yet some of us do. Anyway, this is what I want to say. There were several points where conservatives, I'm going to lump them all together because I think, you know, we're talking Stone, we're talking Alito, we're talking the whole sort of bow tie bunch here, right?
The like bow tie bunch.
Stone, in the face of a functional 6-week abortion ban, offered up a hypothetical where, let's say, a patient provide or sought access to an abortion after 6 weeks, and he called it a late term abortion.
I did. Like, I was a late term,
my dude.
First of all, we don't say late term abortion because there's no such thing. There's abortion, right, and then there's later abortion. Second of all, even if you did use the phrase late term abortion, there is no way that an abortion after 6 weeks gestation could be constituted or considered a late term or a later abortion. Most people don't know they're freaking pregnant at 6 weeks. Let's stop
it. I didn't.
At 6 weeks, we're talking about an embryo the size of a candy corn.
I mean,
Jesus.
It was so ridiculous. And so, like, lump that in with Justice Alito offering up hypothetical after hypothetical of these patients who suffer extreme emotional distress from finding out that this doctor performed an abortion on them that they had scheduled. I scheduled an abortion and they did it. And I'm upset. And now I sue.
But, like, if that happens, like, sure, there are some instances where a patient might want to sue their doctor. As in all cases, there are malpractice lawsuits that happen across the medical profession. But they are malpractice cases. They are tort cases, right? These are cases involving injuries. So you sue for, like, I don't know, intentional infliction of emotional distress. Right? You sue maybe for wrongful death. You don't sue under SB8's bounty hunter law because you got an abortion after 6 weeks gestation.
I mean,
stop it. Like, okay. I am so done with these bad faith, disingenuous arguments. Like, I honestly can't do it.
We have one more that we have to hit, though, because this is the biggest one, and it covered all of the cases, and it is a, like, danger, Will Robinson argument, I think, for the conservatives on this court. And that was the argument that Texas made that, look, the answer, if the conservatives don't like the enforcement mechanism of SB8, the answer, if they don't like the chilling effect on people's constitutional rights that SB8 has had, is to go petition Congress, who can fix it. The answer to Texas's mess is Congress. Congress can't pass paid leave, but those guys are going to, you know, pass the Women's Health Protection Act. Like, literally, we heard that the answer to Texas banning abortion was for Congress to extend federal jurisdiction to sue to block it. And my head is exploding because here's the thing. Abortion is a federal constitutional right that you don't need to go to Congress to plead and beg for permission to enforce.
And I love that. Was it Kagan or Sotomayor? It was Kagan who said that. The two of them were sounding very similar today. I was having a hard time. It's the New Yorkers. They're both from, like, Brooklyn, right? It was very, very, like, just palpable today. But Kagan was like, but isn't it true that we don't necessarily go to Congress and ask for permission for constitutional rights? I mean, that's why we have the Constitution. The Constitution created Congress. What the fuck is happening?
I gesticulate a lot in the recording of these podcasts, but literally I'm like, my watch is just checking to make sure I want to record this workout because of how much I'm moving. It's just so much. And that was just one of the cases. So the TLDR on Holman's Health versus Jackson for me is that in the order of cases, you know, the court heard this case first, and then, you know, USA versus Texas, which we're going to talk about next. But in this case, by hearing it first, it really sort of allowed advocates for abortion rights to drive home just how screwed they are right now.
Yeah.
Right. And like, it's not just that, like, wow, it's tough, we're scared to do our jobs. But no, actually, people can't access constitutionally protected rights. You know, Texas didn't ban abortion outright. They tried to do it an offshore enforcement of it. And so I was really skeptical going into arguments. I'm slightly less skeptical coming out of arguments on Holman's Health versus Jackson, but I don't want listeners to take that as a sign that I think that things are good. Like, I just think that, like, you know, the justices will play a game. And we're here talking about game and power and jurisdiction. And the only thing I'm thinking about is the fact that, you know, since September 1st, Texans can't access abortion care.
And there was no real sense of urgency in the oral arguments today, except for from people like Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan.
Right.
They were the only ones who seemed to recognize that, like, there are people on the ground right now who are being harmed. The rest of these asshats wanted to have thought exercises about federalism.
I mean,
and it's just, it's, but can we get to the arguments in the United States versus Texas? Because what happened
today, which isn't a Bruce Springsteen song, but it could be.
Born in the United States of the United States versus Texas.
Just saying.
But I just, first of all, Solicitor General Preloger, right?
Yes.
Who apparently was the Deputy Solicitor General to Elena Kagan when she was Solicitor General. I saw Ellie Mastal tweet something about
this
that.
This whole story is fantastic. Yeah.
I mean, so that's pretty amazing that, like, you know, she was, anyway, I love that connection there. Mm-hmm. But also, I think this was her first day on the job.
She was sworn in on Friday.
She was sworn
happy
in.
First day of work.
Happy
Solicitor
first day
General.
Of work. Oh, and also, congratulations. My
Truly.
God. Like, I was live tweeting this for our main account. I could not type fast enough. And I typed 95 words a minute.
Yeah.
She came out so strongly talking about the ways in which Texas was in open defiance of the Constitution and that there has to be a way for the United States to vindicate its interests in the Supremacy Clause and in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And what was she met with? I do want to talk more about her actual arguments later, but what was she met with? The most gross display of misogyny that I have seen in a courtroom in quite a while, and I have been a woman in a courtroom.
Yeah, it was really bad.
It was really bad. Can you talk about what the hell was going on with the male justices and the way they treated this woman?
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, really interesting to get into that by, you know, sort of bookending the fact that, you know, this was Preloger's first day on the job and Justice Thomas' 30th anniversary on the court. So those are the bookends today, right? We have Justice Thomas celebrating 30 years on the Supreme Court. We have the only woman arguing before the court today in defense of the federally protected right to an abortion. And we had the male justices all up in her business in ways that I had not seen. Like Neil Gorsuch, who maybe heard say some kind of, unfortunate for me, flattering things from time to time on about his beard, just his beard.
But he hasn't in the past. I have not heard him behave this way. He was hostile.
Yeah.
He was
like,
hostile.
Really hostile, interrupting, rude in ways that, you know, no professional person needs. No professional person. And you could hear it immediately.
Right. Saying things like, just answer the question.
Yeah. And, you know, kudos to the Solicitor General who, you know, I mean, there was one point in time when she answered with some ridiculous hypothetical that Justice Gorsuch had thrown at her about, you know, well, isn't it true that all laws actually chill right sometimes? You know, well, actually, little lady. And she did a very measured, no, Justice Gorsuch. And we know that tone.
Yeah.
And I recognize that
absolutely,
tone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That is the tone that professional women lawyers use when you have to respond to nonsense that's grounded in misogyny, but you can't knock your own legs out from underneath you while you're doing it.
Right.
And that is a dance that sucks. It's a dance I don't miss doing at all.
Ooh, not
at all. In 2021, here we are.
Right.
Still fucking dancing.
And it was a dance that she was so good at. I really, first of all, from an auditory, from someone who was listening to the oral arguments, I really appreciated how frequently she used their names. They would ask her a question and she would say, well, Justice Gorsuch, or well, Justice Kavanaugh, which is fantastic for, you know, as we're entering this new era of transparency where we're allowed to listen to Supreme Court oral arguments, there aren't a lot of people who are familiar with the voices of the justices. And even I, as I said, kept getting Kagan and Sotomayor confused. So I think it's important when lawyers are arguing before the court to make it clear who they're responding to. Because I think that was clearly a product of her training. And I, kudos to whoever was doing these mock arguments with her, because they prepared her very well. She used strong language. She specifically addressed the court as a body and saying, Texas is making fun of you. Like she basically stood up there and was like, so Texas is out here telling y'all that you can't uphold the Constitution and that you have no right to issue an injunction to block this nonsense. Is that really what y'all gonna let them do? Are y'all gonna let them clown you like this? Because I don't know. Wouldn't be me. I'm just saying it wouldn't be me. Like, that was her energy, right? This, like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, perfect. I guess if you guys want to be Texas's, like, you know, little handmaiden or whatever, but not me. Wouldn't be me. So kudos to her. I really thought she did a fantastic job.
And I just want to talk a little bit, like, this is a little bit of the SCOTUS nerdery for folks who get into that thing. You mentioned that she was, you know, deputy to Elena Kagan when Elena Kagan was Solicitor General. Elena Kagan's first argued case before the Supreme Court as Solicitor General was Citizens United. So her mentee is coming up hot on those heels.
Yeah.
And I just think when you look at the career arcs in these spaces, potentially there's a future Supreme Court justice we just heard argue.
Yeah, and if so, more power to her. Speaking of potential future Supreme Court justices, can we talk about Stephen Breyer for a minute? I mean, it's just, at this point, my ire with him grows stronger every day. Because there's no reason for him to be lingering on the bench.
No.
This is a really, really important case that has really, really strong hints of reproductive justice that are associated with it, as I've talked about. Mm-hmm. And Biden is the guy who said that he was going to put a black woman on the court.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been nice to have a black woman on the court today listening to these arguments, to be a part of this historic argument, to be a part of the historic arguments that are happening in a month, and to give Sonia Sotomayor someone else who is going to defend the people the way she has become the defender of the people. I just feel like it is a gross misuse of responsibility on Breyer's part to continue to sit in these oral arguments and ask his dopey questions about the Civil War and quoting Oliver Wendell Holmes. Like, nobody cares, my guy. Nobody cares.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just, it's unfortunate because a couple years ago when we were talking about Holman's Health, the other Holman's Health case involving, you know, targeted restriction on abortion providers and, you know, efforts to close down clinics, Breyer was doing good work on
the
bench.
He was the man. I like his opinion in Whole Woman's Health was beautifully written, which is why I don't understand his insistence on going out like this, because all of the goodwill that he's built up, you know, signing on to these liberal opinions, signing on to opinions that protect abortion rights and that protect LGBTQ rights, he's like, that's all going out the window. He doesn't have a substantial enough presence on the court to be known for anything else than how he's leaving the court, right? Like, people are mad at RBG for dying while she was still on the court, but she has an entirely, like, really substantial legacy about women's rights that is always going to outshine any misdoing people may think that she did in the final years on the bench. This shit with Breyer is mind-boggling to me. I don't know what he's doing.
So let's also talk about Justice Thomas then, because, again, you know, 30 years on the court, which, wow, you know, a thorn in the side of civil rights and particularly abortion rights that entire time, has usually been quiet. You know, the streamed oral argument format means that we hear questions from him. Today, he was downright devious in this case.
Yeah.
Like,
please explain.
You want to talk about that a little bit? Because I don't think folks who are not lawyers will catch on to the kinds of, like, you know, little smoke bombs that he's thrown out there as far as what the conservatives on the court actually think about abortion rights law.
So do you mean, like, how the conservatives on the court don't think that Roe versus Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey are actually precedent worth upholding? So why even talk about it?
Yeah, I mean, Thomas basically had an entire line of questions that was like, So let's say states disagree with Roe and Casey. What's the big fucking deal there?
I mean, can you imagine? Like, let's say states disagree with this desegregation. Why not let's just go ahead and segregate schools again, which, by the way, is not something that's off the table, given the number of Trump appointees who refused to say that Brown versus Board of Education was good law. But this is the fundamental issue about abortion, is that abortion is viewed as something outside of the realm of normal society, outside of the realm of normal healthcare, outside of the realm of morality. Therefore, anything related to abortion, even though it's a constitutional right and has been for 50 years, even though, like, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights says it's a human right, abortion is something else. And if there are any cases related to it, we just don't have to pay attention. Can you imagine Thomas ever saying something about the Heller case?
Which is gun control. I can't imagine them saying something about Obergefell, which is marriage equality.
Or Griswold,
right to contraception. And we don't even have to, like, think about that as a hypothetical. You know, on Friday night, over the weekend, Judge Reed O'Connor, our favorite dipshit up in the Northern District of Texas, issued an opinion that says RFRA and the First Amendment, so that's the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and the First Amendment means that employers, while they can't fire you under Bostock for being gay or being trans, so that's the decision last year that said employers can't do that, they can fire you for having gay sex, though. That's okay.
And how are they going to know that? Are we just, we're just back to peeping into people's bedrooms like we were when we were living under the rubric of Bowers v. Hardwick, which is
exactly
that, like, what?
So I bring that up to say that, you know, there may be some other legal commentators who will say things like, this is just abortion. It's not going to go so far. But we actually know it is going that far. Mm. We have decisions happening in real time right now, while these cases that are being argued by conservative judges that are teeing up the next game. And not to bring it back to Amy Coney Barrett, but I'm going to do it anyway. Even she got that. She was like, so one of the things we have to talk about is the fact that states will probably go in and tweak their enforcement mechanisms no matter what we do here. What do you say to that, Texas? Texas was like, meh.
Whatever.
Sounds fine. We'll deal with it when we deal with it.
But again, the bottom line here is this enforcement mechanism is never going to fly because it's too destructive of democracy and it's too destructive of federalism. But it served its purpose. For two months, abortion has been inaccessible in Texas.
Yeah.
Right? And it's sort of accelerated the timeline in which we're thinking about these abortion cases and thinking about precedent, thinking about undoing precedent. Mm-hmm. And so by this time next year, abortion is probably going to either be outright criminalized or it's going to be thrown back to the states or some patchwork of nonsense. And this enforcement mechanism is going to be a distant memory. It's going to be like, oh, remember that weird thing we were all freaking out about last year? Oh, that was cute. We are never going to hear about this enforcement mechanism ever again, I don't think.
I mean, yeah. So let's talk about what we think is going to happen in these cases and when we're going to get a decision.
That's weird. That's you, SCOTUS Whisperer. That's all you.
I tried to pass that to Imani.
I know you did.
She was like, no.
I'm lobbing that right back over the net.
I legitimately think that they're going to split the difference in these cases. What was wild to me is not just how rude the conservative justices were to the Biden administration and to Solicitor General Prelogar. They were so clearly hostile to the idea that the Biden administration should go in and vindicate constitutional rights in general that they do not want this lawsuit to proceed. And I don't think that they want the Biden administration's lawsuit to proceed because of abortion at all. I honestly think they don't want the Biden administration lawsuit to proceed because they don't want the Biden administration coming in and doing the same thing when it comes to voting rights or trans rights or other places where the Biden administration absolutely should forcefully go in and vindicate the constitutional rights of citizens whose states' legislatures have created some cockamamie scheme to evade them. So I do think that they're going to find a way to shank the Biden administration lawsuit. I really do.
Yeah.
But they can't shank them both. So I think they will let the providers lawsuit continue. I think Amy Coney Barrett showed her hand here and that is she is not comfortable with this enforcement mechanism. I don't think, though, that means that SB 8 is dead for good. Like, I think what that means is that the challenges continue and the Fifth Circuit makes some mess of things and creates some unworkable standard. And in the meantime, the court takes up Dobbs and creates a different unworkable standard for abortion rights that renders them gutted, if in existence at all. And state legislatures go back and look at things like the enforcement mechanism at SB 8 and say, how can we do this better? Like, I really worry about the cleverness that made its way all the way through in folks like John Mitchell and even Neil Gorsuch in his line of questioning when he was like, basically everything kind of chills constitutional rights. And it's okay if sometimes you only can assert your constitutional rights defensively. So what would
does that even mean?
That means that, like, okay, so Texas passes a 6-week abortion ban. I'm pregnant at 10 weeks and I need an abortion. I have to go file a lawsuit and ask the court to say, let me have this abortion. We talked about this, Imani, and we'll hear arguments. This isn't new.
Yeah, it isn't new. Lawsuits don't operate that quickly, right?
Pregnancy is time sensitive.
Pregnancy is very time sensitive. You're not just pregnant ad infinitum, right?
Thank God.
Thank God. But yeah, I think they're going to split the difference. I think you're right. I think that they want the Biden administration out of this. Particularly after watching this woman are like just, wow, breathe fire all over the courtroom. They don't want her in front of them again, I don't think.
No. And what's also really weird is, you know, we talk about abortion cases in the Supreme Court and all the time, and we talk about waiting for opinions at the end of the term, at the end of the term. These are a series of cases that the court could act very quickly on. We could get a decision as soon as this Friday in some cases, right? Like, the advocates themselves are like, honestly, folks, your guess is as good as mine. It could be any day. So unlike other cases, like even Dobbs, which will be argued next month, where we'll likely be waiting until the very end of June to find out just exactly what the hell the court's going to do there, we could have a decision from the court real soon. You could be hearing from Imani and I, folks, a couple times this week.
Good Lord Almighty. And since that's the case, why don't we go ahead and shut this down right now? Because we could be back in your ear holes. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, one never knows.
What would you say, though, before we let folks go, as like the thing, like what was the thing that stuck with you?
The thing that stuck with me was how poorly they treated the only woman arguing in favor of abortion rights in front of the court. I was actually gobsmacked by the way that she was treated.
Yeah.
Really. But how about you?
Yeah. You know, that is definitely up there. And I think also, and I knew this and like I was prepared for it viscerally, but it still pissed me the hell off, which is how little we talked about the effect of SB 8 beyond sort of like, you know, phrases of chilling of rights and things like that. Like, the human rights crisis that is happening in Texas and is having ripple effects across this country, in our state of Colorado even, like the sheer crisis of humanity and lack of care that is going on. If this had been a hurricane that wiped out the healthcare system in the state of Texas, we would be going in and erecting hospitals and delivering care that way.
Right.
The lack of urgency around that. The idea that, like, this is just, you know, we're just here to talk about the Constitution, man.
But the lack of urgency is a sign, right? It's a harbinger of things to come. They don't care about pregnant people. They don't care about abortion rights on the ground. They don't care about any of these things. All they care about is how they're going to figure out a way to make sure that people can't access abortion. And the best way to do that is to pass nonsense laws and then have hyper-conservative courts just let them take effect. And that's what's happened here. The circuit did it.
I need a whiskey.
Supreme Court did it. I'm coming over as we're ending this podcast, and I'm coming over and we're drinking whiskey. That's what's happening right now. I don't care that it's noon. So if you want to talk to us about any of this stuff, you can always find me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can find Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy. You should follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at Rewire News Group. We've got a new social media manager and she is on fire. You should also join our Facebook group.
Yeah.
And if you want to donate to us, we always will accept your money. Rewirenewsgroup.com/donate. It helps us keep this boom lawyered ship afloat.
And it sounds wild to say, but, you know, folks, strap in for the next month because we've got these decisions coming down and then we are coming in hot on the Dobbs argument on December 1st. I almost said January 1st. Good grief. I got to get through this year first. Imani, get over here. Let's have a drink.
Yeah. We'll see you on the tubes, folks.
See you on the tubes, folks.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piglow and Imani Gandhi. Mark Folletti produces the show.